All right, on this episode, we have Will Wood's Forbidden Vancouver Tour Sites.
Forbidden Vancouver Walking Tours.
Forbidden Vancouver Walking Tours. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let us know more about the tours here.
So we run restage walking tours that celebrate and explore Vancouver's history, especially the darker histories of our city that maybe haven't always been well told by
mainstream.
Been well told in the city, you know, yeah. And it's a chance for locals and tourists to explore another side of Vancouver's past.
So mostly, like I was on your website earlier on, it seems like there's quite a bit in Gastown and areas that are they are big in the tourist community, but behind the scenes. It's not as large. I'm from Vancouver. I don't read too much about it. And the things that you were, you know, that I saw on your Instagram feed, I was actually surprised to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, we our tours are thoroughly researched and we include stories that are not well known to the most Vancouverites.
Well, I'm looking at some of the old buildings that you have posted. Like I didn't know the history on most of that.
Yeah,
I don't even know where to find it.
Unsolved murders and the, you know, smallpox outbreaks, the Great Fire. We've got five different walking tours and special events, and there's lots of different angles on the city's past. We've got an architecture tour, the Art Deco and Chocolate Tasting Tour. We've got a tour about the history of LGBT people in the city, the Really Gay History Tour. And Vancouver had a really important role in the not just in Canada, but globally in the struggle for equality for queer people. We explore a lot of those histories on that tour. We have our Dark Secrets of Stanley Park tour. Everyone goes to Stanley Park and thinks like, oh yeah, this is like this big forest that's always been here. It's got a really rich social history, that land, that no one's really aware of. And it's not really brought to your attention when you go to the park. There's no exhibits or installations there that celebrate that history. There was an Indigenous community there for hundreds or thousands of years before white people turned up. It was their home. It was a large Indigenous community. And it was the place where Indigenous people canoed out to meet Captain George Vancouver when he first explored this land in the 1790s. And it wasn't until it became a park in the late 1800s that there was this conflict between the sort of ruling white Canadian establishment that wanted to turn it into a park and the Indigenous people who lived there, and the story of what happened to those people and how they were persecuted and forced to leave their homes is an incredible story. And it really charts much of the evolution, early evolution of how white and Indigenous communities have struggled, you know, how brutal the treatment was of Indigenous people, but that as the 20th century ticked past, there were many legal defeats that the Indigenous people suffered at the hands of the court system, where their right to live there wasn't protected, even they'd lived there for so long. And today we've got these totem poles there that people go and look at, but those totem poles, majority of them aren't even from Lower Mainland. They came from Northern BC, and they're the artwork of the local Indigenous nation's great rivals. And how would you feel about being forced from your land and having the artwork of your great rivals put on the land that you lived on?
So do you talk about all this on the walking tour?
Yeah, it's what we talk about. We talk about social history. You know, on our Forbidden Vancouver tour, we talk about liquor prohibition predominantly in the early 20th century. And who even knew we had prohibition here? Everyone thinks that's a US thing, right? Like Al Capone and Chicago and New York City and speakeasies. But we had prohibition here first, before the States. I mean, all the same stuff, corruption, bootlegging, there was rum running happening, there was massive corruption in all levels of government. There were mobsters making huge sums of money. So we talk about that history on that tour, which I think is just a remarkable phase in BC history. And then our tour, The Lost Souls of Gastown, which is our most popular tour, is a bit different. It's actually delivered in character. We have actors deliver that piece, and it's more like a roving one-person play through Gastown than it is a conventional walking tour.
Oh, interesting.
And that has that charts the sort of fictional life of an early Vancouver resident and who lived through smallpox outbreaks, survived the Great Fire, was involved in an famous unsolved murder. So it's based on documented histories from the city's archives, but it's kind of woven into a first-person narrative. That's really, you know, really popular. It's popular at Halloween. We get a lot of people on that tour.
Interesting. During the COVID, are you operating or is it
No, it's right totally now? Shut down. Yeah, because you know, we're inherently a crowd of people meeting on the street. It's kind of difficult to see how we can do that in the spirit of social distancing.
Yeah. Understandable. Any idea when you guys are going to be back open up?
Well, we're hoping for July. Like, if numbers continue to fall in BC with the virus, then it might be possible for us to maybe in July, if they further reduce the restrictions, we can get moving again. Who knows? It might be longer than that. It probably will be longer than that, I think.
We'll see. So, well, let's go back here. How'd you start this? What were you doing prior to getting involved in this?
So I was working for a company that I'm sure many of your listeners will have heard of, which is called Deloitte. And I worked there for 10 years, both in the UK and here in Vancouver. I was in their risk advisory practice. I joined out of university and went through to senior manager, and I was working here. And I actually came close in 2005 to leaving with a friend of mine to start a tour company in the UK. And that was something I was really keen on doing. I've been inspired by a couple of other tour experiences I'd had. One was the Edinburgh Ghost Tours, which I thought was a really incredible and really spooky experience they put together up there with Edinburgh's got these underground crypts and hundreds of year old Gothic history of the city. So I really thought that was great. And then when we got here, so then I had that experience. I sort of went somewhere down the path of a business plan to start a tour company in the UK in 2005. It didn't work out. And then I moved here with my wife, and we went on the Underground Seattle tour, which is another experience that I was really impressed with. I don't know if you've been on that, but you get to explore the underground downtown Seattle, which used to exist and then got built up over. So it's sort of still down there, a lot of the old storefronts and stuff.
That's still there, so you can go
to some of it's still there. Yeah, interesting. It's pretty big enough, but some of it's still there. They're sort of like basements today of buildings.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
So yeah, so it was around the time that our first child was born, Jasper. I thought, well, I'm kind of in this point now with my career at Deloitte that either I go for partner and push really hard and carry on down this corporate path, or I leave and do something different, because, you know, with having a family and like the expenses, and you know, before you know it, you've got a mortgage and car payments and all that stuff. And you know, I just wasn't sure that I'm just going to change the position here a bit. I just wasn't sure that was really what I wanted to to do. I'd always wanted to start my own business. That had always been my plan. My plan had never been to stay at Deloitte and have a career there as a partner. And so I thought, geez, if I don't do it, I'm never gonna do it. I'm gonna be like 50 talking about starting a business. So I'm
not. Which there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, but I was ready. I was ready to do it. I didn't want to. I wasn't like still. I spent a lot of time thinking about what the business would be, and it's a couple of sort of false starts. And then I thought, this is a great business to start with. I'm a big show off. I love lots of attention. I couldn't think of anything better than being a tour guide and walking around having a group of people paid to listen to me for 2 hours. And I have a curious mind. I'm interested in history and people, you know, I'm interested in the history of people. So I'd already been quite a voracious reader anyway, but I spent a ton of time at the archives in the Vancouver Public Library reading on Vancouver history. And I enrolled in acting school for a year, did that. And then, 2012, February, I started, my first tour. And then it's been 8 years now,
So how did you get the word out in the beginning?
TripAdvisor's always been big for us. Facebook's been really big. We've always tried to do a lot of media outreach, get listings in Georgia Strait, Daily Hive, that kind of thing. The industry's changed a little bit since we started. Like when we started, it was like TripAdvisor was like the only show in town. Mm-hmm. And we were on there, we got a lot of great reviews, and that really grew our company fast. But now there's a lot more they're called OTAs. Mm-hmm. That are kind of like resellers, of which TripAdvisor is one of those. It's a growing market of OTAs, and increasingly the number of tickets you sell directly yourself as a company is reduced, like falling every year, and more being sold by resellers. And each of those resellers want, they're all based on customer reviews. to a large degree. So yeah, we do a lot of work with OTAs and outreach to them and optimize our listings, that kind of stuff. We do Google ads, we do Facebook ads.
Okay, so you're running ads, but in the beginning, or that's the, I know now you guys do, but in the beginning?
No, we didn't run Google ads to begin with. No, it was just pretty much just TripAdvisor, and then we got quite a bit through Facebook and media outreach as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you leave Deloitte right away, and or were you still at Deloitte and running?
I left. Back now, even for their busy season in the group is like September through December. So I go back part time for 4 months a year, most years. Because I mean, I like the people, I like all the people there. I've got a lot of good friends there. I know the work. I have one of my regular clients I go back to. So it's been pretty good going back, back every year.
Okay.
I don't know if I go back this year with COVID and everything, what the demand will be, but as long as they like me coming back, I'm happy to go back and do that work. You know, it just helps make things a bit easier financially. And, I don't want every decision with the company to be like make or break, like, oh, should we spend this money on printing and distributing brochures? Should we, whatever it is, like some sort of marketing spend, and then have that hang over us all year? Like, geez, if this doesn't work out, it's going to like put us really far back. Mm-hmm. I want it to be like, we can have the ability to make these, and not bets isn't the right word, but kind of investments, and then they don't pay off. Well, it's a lesson learned. It's not like a catastrophic financial blow, you know?
Exactly.
And that's what the lawyers helped with, for sure.
And that's a good thing starting young, right? You can always bounce back or go back to a job.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. Any advice for somebody that is sitting at Deloitte or their competitors or at a law firm or any type of company, and they want to start something else, they want to start the business? Is it good to jump in and do it all your time?
I feel like there's a few different angles to this. I have people come to me and ask that question who work in consulting or Big Four or whatever. And I think often the biggest challenge for people is they've got a mortgage. You know, like we didn't have a mortgage, we rented. And if you're paying out like $4,000 a month in a mortgage, that's really hard to start a business, because you're probably not going to make any money for 2 years.
Yeah.
All the money you make is going to go back into the business. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of money you've got to find to live on and to pay that huge mortgage. And I had a couple of people approach me over the years. Like, one guy had a plan about starting a craft brewery. Oh yeah, great idea. I mean, that's, who doesn't like craft breweries? Like, yeah, that sounds great. And we were talking about it, and he sort of had this plan about how he was going to do it. And we sort of got into the nuts and bolts. Well, how would you do this? And as soon as we got to the topic of like, well, would you move out of your home and rent a one bed place somewhere cheap so that the rent would cover the mortgage and whatever it was, or sell your home? He's like, no way. Like, yeah. He wasn't willing to make any sacrifices at all in his like standard of living. But if your standard of living means you and your wife need to make like six figures a year, there's not many businesses you can jump straight into that are going to make you that kind of income.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So maybe it depends on your own financial situation. Like, if people have got some capital set aside, or they've got a spouse with a really great job who can sort of carry the costs of their living expenses or whatnot. But you've got to want it. You've got to really want to do it, because it is a sacrifice financially, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, cut back in expenses and start and work hard, as is the only way of doing it. And if somebody doesn't want to, you know, cut out their mortgage or downsize or sell, it's going to be hard. It's impossible to get done.
Yeah, especially as you probably need to finance the company itself. I mean, what we did was really low cost. We really bootstrapped our whole way. We never had any debt. We really grew with just grew through revenue.
Well, you're more service business, right? You get your overhead isn't that much.
A lot of our costs, we've cut back our advertising spend, which is our biggest spend because we're not operating right now. Insurance has gone on hold. We haven't really got any costs right now while we're closed down. A lot of companies, they need a big investment to begin with, you know, if you want to
brewery, get
out of a store or something.
You know? Yeah, you look at Crab Brewery, there's some major expenses there to start, right?
Right, right.
Unless you're buying something that's already gone under. And everything's set up in there, but those are quite hard to find because there's other people lined up to take over.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe you can get an investor to help with it. But then I feel like I didn't want to have that. I felt like that was just like another way of being employed. You know, like, so if I started a company and some other guy funds it, I'm just working for them.
Yeah.
Might as well stay at Deloitte.
Exactly.
Yeah. There. So I mean, and that's not, you know, so for some people, that's the right model. But for me, it wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Some people are looking for the mentorship, or they're looking for some type of cash. And other ones are thinking it's going to be their job. It's going to be the same thing. You know, I'm going to get a paycheck every 2 weeks, every month.
Yeah.
The same, you know, there's going to be times good luck in the first 2 years getting a paycheck.
Right. Yeah. That's it. You know, a lot of people are just not willing to have that insecurity in their life.
Exactly. So how do people get a hold of you when you guys open up? Hopefully it is July.
Oh, forbiddenvancouver.ca, our website. Yeah, it's we spent the time in the last couple of months doing quite a lot of housekeeping on there and tidying things up that needed to be fixed for a while. So the website's looking great at the moment. Thanks. That's one good thing from COVID. We did some like long needed cleanup on it.
I was on a call with another business earlier on today. He's like, the amount of stuff I got done during COVID is amazing. He's like,
yeah.
He's like, please. He's like, I'm saying this in the nicest way. He goes, I hope there's going to be something else like this in the future, so I can actually take that time to do all this house cleaning. I'm like, no, you just gotta plant that seed. You gotta figure that out and book that time for like the 2 months to reorganize and figure your stuff out. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, true.
Not COVID's not good, but the downside what people have and
yeah, you got to make the best of it. You got to make the best of it.
Yeah,
you do.
For sure. All right. Well, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. And how do people get a hold of you?
ForbiddenVancouver.ca. Simple
as that. Is that the best? And Instagram.
Yeah. We're on Instagram. Yeah, Forbidden_Tour. Same on Twitter, and Forbidden Vancouver Walking Tours on Facebook.
Perfect. We'll have everything below. Hang tight. Let's chat after I get off this stop recording here. Okay.